of you. Now listen, if you didn't cross and I tell you to break your stop question, step back clean. Any questions from the challenger or chief second? Any questions from the champion or chief second? All right, let's get it on. Come on.
All right, and with the words of Mills Lane, we're ready. I don't know about you folks, but here at the Hilton Hotel, there is electricity in the crowd. I've got goosebumps on the line. The WBC Heavyweight Championship of the World. Mike Tyson has trained his whole life for this. His whole life has been for this night. But Trevor wants to prove that he's one of the great champions. Let's see how long his reign lasts. Tyson goes to work right away, and he gets Trevor Stone, and he's down. He'll have to take the standing eight count as he steps right up the count to four and five and six. Look at this combination. And Burbank ready to go, but he stays on his feet. Another right hand clips it up. He can't take shot, but that's it. Tyson again, he knows he can hurt him anytime. Left up, right hand on the left foot. Trevor's ready to go again. Tyson knows that he can score at will now. He's in total command in this fight right now. We're only in round two, and the heavyweight champ already reeling is Trevor Burbank. It's just a matter of time before Mike gets the clean thrust, and he goes to the body downstairs. Catches him with the right hand up there. 20 years old, Mike Tyson on his way to becoming one of the youngest heavyweight champions of all time. Bangs the body. Wow, with that uppercut of Tyson. Hits him with the right left. He goes down. He should be able to get up from this. His legs may be shut. They are. And Trevor Burbank falls back in. Oh, I don't know if he's going to be able to continue. He's got the heart. But his body won't let him do what his mind wants to. And he's counted out. It'll be scored as a knockout. Mills Lane counted him out to 10. It's all over. We've got a brand new heavyweight champion of the world, Mike Tyson, who can reign for a long, long time.
The first question we ask is, who am I?
The first question we ask...
Language.
Who am I?
The makeup of the mind. Multiple voices. Voices fighting each other.
Words.
The makeup of the mind. Madness. Chaos.
Who am I?
Heavyweight champion of the world.
Voices fighting each other.
Madness.
Madness.
The chaos of the brain.
My early notions of my life, I can remember being in the hospital. I was always sick. I don't know what was wrong. Maybe it's because of my lungs, because I have a lung problem. That's why all my fights, thank God all my fights didn't have to last long, because I was never able to breathe good. It was my mother and her friend, probably about eight of them, and my brother and my sister, and they were all around, sitting around the hospital bed. My mother, I believe, was living with my father at the time. Might have been my father. I believe to be my father.
I was totally my father.
And something was going wrong. I believe after I was born, times had gotten rough. Her and my father started having altercations, and she left. And I guess the load was too much for her to have to carry, so we moved into a different neighborhood, which was the Brownville section of Brooklyn. If anyone's familiar with that neighborhood, it was just very horrific, very tough, very gruesome kind of place, you know, kill to be killed. We would go to school, and these people would pick on us. We would come in the building to go home, and these guys would pull out guns and try to rob us. Well, actually, they did rob us for whatever little quarters and chains we did have. I can remember going to school and being bullied and people taking my glasses and putting them in the trunk of a milk cart. I've never had any kind of physical altercation with anybody at that particular time in my life. So I couldn't believe a human being would do that. I never dreamed somebody, an absolute stranger, would do that to me. I didn't know why. So, wow. I just ran. I didn't know what happened. I just ran. And I think that's why people like myself become more assertive in life and become more aggressive and become more outgoing in life, because they fear that they don't want that to happen to them no more, and they don't want to be humiliated in that particular fashion anymore. And that's why I believe I'm the person that I am. And people have a misconception that I'm something else, but I'm just afraid of being that way again, of being treated that way again, of being physically humiliated in the streets again. And I just wish I knew how to fight back then. I didn't know how to fight. I didn't know, but I was afraid to fight. I was so afraid. But I like pigeons, so I took a lot of my money that I stole and I bought some pigeons. And I used to fly pigeons all the time. And then one day, these guys found out where I had my pigeons. And one guy, they were trying to steal my pigeons. I was trying to take them. I was explaining, no, no, give me my birds. And one guy said, you want your bird back? And he just took the bird and he popped the neck. And he threw him on the floor. And then I said, that's the first time I ever had a fight. And I won. And once I won that fight, I just thought I could fight. I won. It was an older guy. I won. And I was proud. I won. I was wild and just flaring wild, overhand rights like a ballroom brawler. But I beat the guy up. And everybody wanted to be my friend now, so people weren't bothering me as much, and I could, and it was able for me to wear my jewelry and my pants and my pretty looking clothes and stuff without people bothering me. It was around the summer of 76, going into 77, I happened to meet these guys. I went to a roller skating rink. These guys were interesting looking guys, with they were my age, but they dressed like men. They had trench coats, they had they were well dressed. They had the alligator sneakers. They had Pierre Cardin suits. And I was like, these guys are like only 2 years older than me. They were driving mopeds and
these
stuff.
Guys had girl wow.
And they were just little kids.
I thought they were rich. I said, these guys are wealthy and rich. Well, I never knew these guys were criminals or anything. I'm saying, wow, this is cool.
I saw a friend of mine that knew these guys. I said, yo, man, who are these guys, man? These guys are fly. These guys are cool. They're what's going on. He said, nah, this is the Run the Road crew. These guys get money. I said, what you mean? They make money. They're hustling. And I said, really? And then I got to know these guys, and these guys would, they were breaking houses. And I was younger than them, but they were like 13, 14, but I was bigger because I was always fat. I was a fat kid. They were the marijuana and the cocaine spots. It was it worked like this. We would knock on the door, and we would put a $5 bill or a $10 bill or whatever the money or the price of the product was. We would put it through the door, and they would give us our drugs. We would send somebody to the door that knew them. And they would open the door, the guy would come in, then we would come in behind them with our guns, and we would rob them. I would go and I would go in the pocket because I was the shortest guy and the smallest and the youngest. I would always go in the pockets of the guys. And on some of those cases, some of my friends that got caught, and some of the people that caught them in the house wasn't so friendly, and some of them got killed. Some of the people, if they catch you in the house, it wasn't going to be a pretty story. Some of them went to jail, some of them got killed, and some of them got beat up badly. And a lot of my friends are a lot of my friends are dead that I grew up with. They're not around anymore. Else they're in jail for the rest of their life. Else they're really strung out on dope somewhere in Brooklyn or Manhattan. Very few of them are still functioning adults right now. But at that stage in my life, it was just exciting. It was like it was never going to end.
Me and your world are so vastly different. You could never understand the action and the excitement of it all. I mean, the cunningness, to be able to outsmart somebody was a big thrill. I mean, not just to go out there and beat a guy up and slam on the ground and take his wallet. To outsmart them, to out-time them, to outthink them, even though they know that you're a crook. When you're on the bus or when you're walking in to the check cashing place or the grocery store, they know to watch you and you still outsmart them. Like most people would think, she knows me, she's on to me, I'm going to walk away. But just to still watch them, they think they know, and then they make one mistake and you outsmart them and they have their wallet.
I got arrested one day. It was a gentleman that lived in the Bedford-Stuyvesant section of Brooklyn that I knew him. He had did something to this woman, a prostitute. He had snatched a bag or something, and I was talking to him. But she knew it was him, but she thought I did it because I was with him. And she took her hot chocolate and poured it right in my face. And as soon as she did that, the cop had grabbed me and threw me in the car, and I had all my skin that fell off my face. And I had nothing to do. It's not that I was an angel or anything. I had already had money in my pocket, so when they went in my pocket and checked my pocket, I had $1,500. I'm 12 years old with $1,500 in my pocket. There was no way I could claim the money, so I went straight to Spofford Juvenile Center. And in Spofford Juvenile Center, I was nervous, I was scared. I was the first time I was ever arrested, and I was 12 years old, so I went there. So all my friends that I haven't seen in years, they were here, they were locked up there. And it was like being away from home. It was like a class reunion. The guys I haven't seen in months, and I saw them there, and then I was no longer intimidated. And I started going there on an often basis, probably twice a month, once a month, three times a year. And eventually they sent me upstate. I went to try-in detention for boys upstate New York. I met a gentleman by the name of Bobby Stewart. His name was Irish Bobby Stewart that he fought under. I would see guys on Saturdays or Fridays, they would go and box with him and relieve tension. And he would just be, guys would come over knocked. But these guys would just go over there to get the help
beat out of him just to get some tension, just to relieve some tension. So I went over there and I wanted to box him. He hit me in the stomach. I never felt a feeling. I just felt like I died. Hit right in the solar plexus. I went down. I said, I just knew I was going to beat this little white man. No way he was going to be. I thought it was a tough one. Hit me in the solar plexus. I never felt. I just went down. I jumped back up to show I was tough, but I couldn't feel anything. It's my whole blood circuit. Everything stopped. I said, what? I couldn't talk. I couldn't breathe. I don't know what the hell happened. He told me to walk around, walk around. Because he didn't want, because I tried to show that I was tough, but he knew I was hurt, so he said, walk it off, walk it off. So I walked around, and after we finished boxing, I said, can you teach me some more of that, sir? And he told me, you don't want to learn, you don't want to learn. And he said, everybody said they want to learn. So I had to continue to prove to him that I wanted to learn by conducting my behavior well. I became a nice guy, I talked to people nice, I became a gentleman. And then eventually my grades got better, and then he started teaching me how to box. And once he started teaching me how to box, he realized I was getting close to going parole to go back to Brooklyn. He said, I don't want you to go back to Brooklyn because you're going to get in trouble and get killed or go to jail. I want you to go to this man. This guy could take you to the next level. And at that time, I was probably 1980. I'm at Customato.
You got to score points when you get into that. So score points when you're doing the amateur.
I didn't trust him because I didn't trust anybody but Bobby Stewart at that particular time. And it was like he was transferring me over to another person, and I didn't trust anybody but him. And then he was like giving me to this guy. I said, what the heck is going on here? And I couldn't understand it, but he said, just trust this man. Trust this man.
I don't trust anybody in general. I don't like people to know me at all. And I just recently trust him because the same much I trust him, I guess he trusts me, and he trusts me a lot. So, but no one really knows Mike Tyson. Nobody's really friendly with Mike Tyson.
Who, I?
Except Customato.
Customato would watch me for like, he didn't let me box. He would just talk to me for like 2 or 3 weeks about fighting and the psychology of fighting. And when fighting was truly about, fighting wasn't nothing physical. It was all spiritual. And he was saying, if you don't have the spiritual warrior in you, you'll never be a good fighter. I don't care how big or strong you are. And he explained that to me.
Your mind is not in your way. Your mind is not in your way. And something distracting you.
As time was going on, this guy would just kept saying these great things about it. So this guy, I didn't know if this guy was queer. He just kept saying great things. He said, man, you're a great fighter. He just kept saying, you're the greatest. You do splendid. You look great. You're looking better. He just kept giving me compliments and compliments about everything I did. So what's the role of this guy? I never had the slightest idea. He was just building up my confidence. But as time went on, I understood what he was doing. As I became an adult, I understood he was building up my confidence. And we started fighting. I had my first amateur fight, and I was so scared in my first amateur fight. I went downstairs and said, I'm going to go to the store. It was in the Bronx, New York. I said, I'm going to the store to my trainer. And I went downstairs, and I said, man, I should get on this training. It's never come back. I wanted to get on the training. It's leave. I was so scared. I didn't want to fight anybody. It's just such a different dynamic than fighting somebody in the ring than it is fighting somebody in the street. And I never thought I could fight somebody. Even after all the training, I was totally intimidated fighting somebody in the ring. But I put myself together with the discipline I learned from Cuss, and I went in the ring and I scored a third round knockout. I don't know, but after the first, it was too nerve-wracking fighting, I thought at first. So I didn't really want to fight, really. So I was staying at Cuss' house. You know, I come from a really poverty-stricken area, and when I came to live with Cuss, they live in a 14-room Victorian mansion. And I first come here, I said, wow, I could rob these white guys, these white motherfuckers. They ain't hip. Not thinking, I'm not knowing this guy been around the world a bunch of times. I never knew he was like me. He was from a bad neighborhood. He was a street kid like me. And then one day he used to just say, listen, you have the chance to change your life, your family's life. You could be something very special. Don't you want to be champion? You could be champion of the world. And I didn't pay no attention to it. He said, really? You could be champion of the world. You could devastate the world. No man could take what you did. You just got to believe it. I looked at this guy, and then I started thinking. I said, you really? And I said, this guy's really crazy. That's what I said. This guy's crazy. He said, you do what I tell you to do, and if it doesn't work, then you could leave. So I said, okay, bet. So I did everything he told me to do, and I won every championship from the amateur championship. Oh, I won all the championships. I'm gonna cry. So I won every championship that he told me, because he told me what to do. And I started believing in this old man. I stopped being a little thief. I used to go back to New York and rob people and then come back upstate and hide out. Then I stopped doing all that. I changed my whole life. I said, I'm going to stick to this boxing shit.
Master, there you go. Now you got, again. Who's the last guy to stop? Time. Very good. That's right.
I turned my whole life over to boxing. I turned into a complete animal. I turned into a disciplinarian. This guy had me clean my room. This guy brainwashed me so much that if he told me to bite, I bite. If he told me anything, I was like his dog. He broke me down and rebuilt me. I was just like a total different person.
Mostly just changed my life because he helped me to deal with people. I know how to deal with people now. Before, I couldn't talk to people. I always want to be alone. And now I learned how to deal with anyone. I could talk to anyone, even about their problems. And it's like a father and son relationship. You know, even though he is my manager and trainer, sometimes I forget that because of the way we are. The first day he met me, he took me in his house. He didn't even know me.
I can say honestly, I have a very deep affection for him. I do. To me, he's my boy. He's with me. But I often say to him, you know, I owe you a lot, and he doesn't know what I mean, but I'm going to tell him now what I mean. If he weren't here, I probably wouldn't be alive today. The fact that he is here and doing what he's doing, and doing as well as he's doing, and improving as he has, gives me the motivation and interest to stay alive. Because I believe that a person dies when they no longer wants to live. But I have a reason with Mike here, and he gives me the motivation. I will stay alive, and I will watch him become a success. Because I will not leave until that happens.
I was 14, and I fought in the Junior Olympics in 1980, I believe it was. And I broke all the records.
You tell me what you're going to do tomorrow.
I'm going to go in there, I'm going to jab to the head, then I'm going to throw eighth to the body, and then I'm going to move after I hit and punch the body.
What are you going to do when you get inside?
I'm going to open up like a son of a bitch.
I won it all. I won all my fights by knockouts in the first round. And I broke the record with a knockout in 8 seconds. I guess that's the fastest knockout on record.
How you doing, Coach? Right on the chin. I'm going home and relax on, because I don't want my head to swell any more than it is. Okay.
Move your head. Keep the head down when you come up with the H. Keep your head down.
It's coming up.
Yeah, I mean, it's not coming up, but it's starting to come up. You can make it perfect. It's good, but it's not perfect.
Cus was different than me than it was with his other fighters. Cus trained me to be totally ferocious in the ring and out. We had a totally different relationship. We had a totally different relationship. That's why once I got involved with Cus, I was a young boy, but once he spoke with me every night about discipline and character. I knew nobody was, nobody physically was gonna ever fuck with me again. Once I talked to Cus, and Cus talked to me over and over again, every night, and every night for hours and hours. When I was a young kid, when I was 13 and 14, I just never had to worry about nobody ever bullying me again. I knew that would never happen again. Because I knew I would fucking kill them if they fucked with me.
I deal with a huge inferiority complex.
As a little boy, I was fat and everybody picked on me. So now, I never backed down from a fight. So when people, a person could say some infantile thing like, you're stupid or you got your ass kicked in a fight, and I will strike them. I'm not somebody that would walk away from a street fight. I would provoke a fight with them. I won't start one, but I won't walk away from one either. In a fight in the streets, not like the ring, it has to be almost to the death because you never know. If you don't knock him out cold or you don't beat him half to death, he'll go home and come back with a gun or come back with a friend with a gun or a gang of people. So normally a fight in the street is normally deadly. There's nothing like fighting when you're young and you're happy.
Blinding speed.
It's nothing more deadly and nothing more proficient than a happy fighter. Everybody believes that the mean and the surly fighter is the tough fight, but that's not true. The guy that's more relaxed and the guy who loves what he does and he's just happy to be in there doing what he does. I was never really a big heavyweight. When I was in my prime, I never weighed over 217, 219. But me and my trainer, Customato, we always put a great deal of emphasis on our speed and combinations. He always told me, speed kills. Speed is what kills. The speed kills. Most of my fighters that I emulated and admired was very lightweight guys. Guys like Tony Cannavieri, Kid Chocolate, Henry Armstrong. The little guys were just so exciting to watch. And that's how come I knew that I was going to be an exciting fighter, because I have the speed and the power.
Left hand almost thrown Richardson right through the canvas. It's trouble in both the first and second rounds, and now it's trouble here.
Hey, how you doing, my man?
All right.
You going to be the next champ or what? That's why I'm in the business for, of course.
Bill and I both feel that Mike Tyson is definitely going to be the heavyweight champion of the world. The real question is when.
I just know what I have in the back of my head. I have a goal that me, Cuss, Jim Jacobs, and my trainer, Kevin Rooney, all planned. And God forbid, if anything happened to Cuss, we're all professionals, and we're going to continue.
When Customato died, I was in New York City. I was in the Manhattan section of New York City, Lower East Side. I was accompanied by Jimmy Jacobs, who was my manager at the time. And he had told me that within 10 hours, Cuss would be dead, and we have to go to the bank and deposit some money. It was some money that I had made for my fight, a few $100,000, and he had said, we have to deposit some money. So we went to the bank, and I was at the bank depositing money, and I was just crying, just crying out, just crying and crying and crying. And the lady at the bank was, I was hysterical. The lady at the bank had asked, what is wrong? Is everything all right? And Jim Jacobs had explained that we had lost a good friend of ours that died, or will be dying shortly. And he's handling it very rough. And I was just very hysterical. And Jim Jacobs was cool as ice, nothing fazed him. But to me, it was like, I lost my whole life. I didn't know where to go from there. I can remember being at Customato's funeral. I was a pallbearer there. You know, I was very proud to be a pallbearer for him. And I was just 19 years old. I didn't know what to do with my life. There was news cameras there. There were reporters there. And I was just saying, I don't have my friend no more. I was very scared. I felt very vulnerable. I felt lonely. I just felt naked to the world. I just felt like a very vulnerable young boy. And it was just a real horrific time for me in my life. I was just a young boy at 19, and I didn't have the chance to let Cuss see the prospects of me growing as a heavyweight champion. A boy comes to me with a spark of interest. I feed that spark and it becomes a flame. I feed the flame and it becomes a fire. I feed the fire and it becomes a roaring blaze.
Moment Lewis has been waiting for, with smashing lefts and rights to the jaw and volley. He's out to win it here in round one. Every ounce of strength he has in those punches, he moves in to finish the challenger.
being a young boy and living in Catskill, New York, I was able to watch as many fight films as possible, so because there was a big fight collection up there, and it was just wonderful watching those fighters. I know every move they have. I know everything they do. I know, because I studied them for years and years as a little boy. From 13 years old to what, 21, I studied them. I watched them every night. A couple of times a night, I watched them. I know every punch they throw. I know everything they do.
Hi there, folks. This is Jim Stevenson taking you back to September 22nd, 1927. Soldiers Field, Chicago.
Well, it's so interesting because I have a great deal of respect for Cuss. You know, everything he says, I grow for. I believe everything Cuss said. His word in boxing is Bible to me. When he describes fighters and he talks about fighters, he talks about all their good points. He talks about Jack Dempsey's ferocity.
Cutting it down.
I mean, he talks about Rocky Marciano's will and dedication. And when he discussed Muhammad Ali, he talked about his character and personality. He said that's the only reason Ali is the best, because he has more character. And I thought that was funny. I was a young kid. I didn't know how to understand that back then. But as I got older, I realized what he meant.
I never really had an image of myself. I really read about a lot of people who I believe were great men, and I took qualities from them. And I said, well, in order to be a great man, you have to be this way and that way and this way. I didn't know these were great men that had bad qualities. And I used to read a lot of times, read about Errol Flynn, I read about Jack Jones, all these Jack Dempsey. You read about all these great people and what you read about them and what they all have in common with their conquests over great women and famous women or whatever it may be. So I always thought, like, in order to be a great figure, you have to have these women in your life. And the men, most women you conquer, the greater figure you may be. I never knew that conquering so many women takes so much from you, more than gives too much, than more than adds so much to you. I was intrigued with sex because I've been in a household where my mother was promiscuous and her friends was very promiscuous. The whole neighborhood I come from is very promiscuous. You hear people talking, suck my dick, suck my pussy. So it's a very promiscuous environment. I wanted to be a guy that had a lot of girls. That was my main objective. But in order to be that guy, I had to restrain myself. I always read that the great fighters never had sex before fights. And I was a young kid and I wanted to be the youngest heavyweight champion in the world. So I restrained myself from sex for around 5 years. I think the best thing in life is to abstain from sex. After abstaining from sex and then having sex, I think that's the best feeling in the world, after abstaining from it.
I've always been interested in women. I'm drawn to them. They have a magnetic force towards me. I've always been intrigued by them. And when I see one, I always have a knack to talk to them. I love talking. It's monologue, talking, and sometimes it's difficult because that's why I like companions. I like talking. I love conversation. I like talking to one another. One day I was at a party. It was a beautiful party. It was on Fifth Avenue around 1990. It was incredible. It was a great party. Everybody, I went to this party and it was just such a beautiful woman, a luminary crowd of people in there, and I was just impressed. And it was this model there that was just looking this incredible, man. I'd never seen a woman look so exquisite. And for some bizarre reason, she started talking to me as if she knew me. I didn't know her at all, but I knew she knew who I was, but she was intrigued with me. And it was so bizarre. She went to the bathroom, and I was craving her so desperately. I just went to the bathroom after her, and I sat on the sink, and I just started performing fellatio on her. It's monologue, talking. That's why I like companions. I like talking. I like talking to one another. And it was on and popping from there on.
I can remember boxing for the heavyweight championship of the world. It was November 22nd, 1986. I was fighting against Trevor Burbick.
Greatest fighter to ever live was Muhammad Ali. And he had just took a humiliating beating by Trevor Burbick, and I was angry, and I was looking for revenge. And I can remember Ali coming to me in the ring, because he was introduced to the ring, and Ali coming to me and said, get him for me.
By that time, I got a hold of Trevor Burbick. I was just, I had sex, but I must have been a prostitute I had sex with, because I had contracted gonorrhea. Either a prostitute or else a very filthy young lady. I can't even remember. I was burning like a good human in July.
And but I knew it was just I was too embarrassed to go to the doctor at the time, so I had to just endure the pain. But it didn't bother me. The gonorrhea didn't bother me because I always had my mind framed with the old fighters such as Harry Greb, Mickey Walker, and those kind of guys. These guys lived that kind of life. They didn't care about anything. They had one objective, and that was just win. And I just wanted to win.
Crushing right hand. Wow, with a left hook.
I wanted to decimate him. I know if I decimated him, everybody would know I was a serious contender. And they'd be able to take me for real. Because at that time, people knew I was a good fighter, but they thought I was fighting tomato cans and flunks, and they didn't know. They said, this guy's not a real fighter. He's just fighting easy fights. So that's why my main objective was to decimate him. I wanted to take him out in one round. I wanted to really hurt him real bad.
Bangs the body. Wow, with an uppercut of Tyson. Catches him with a light left hook, and he goes down.
He represented my future, my life. He represented everything that I wanted in life. After the fight, I was just so, I was just so deluded. I didn't know what to do. I just knew Cus would have been proud if he was there to watch me win the championship. It was something that we always talked about.
I'd like to dedicate my fight to my great guardian, Cus D'Amato. And I'm sure he's up there and he's looking and he's talking to all the great fighters and saying his boy did it.
He's smiling, that's right. What are your ambitions from here on out?
To unify the title.
I wore the championship belt for probably at least 3 weeks. Even when I went to the store, I just wore it around my waist. I was just very proud.
This heavy metal sound that you hear is Mike Tyson about to make his way in, I believe. Everything that Tyson does is intimidating. There he is. He comes out. He doesn't wear a coat in. He's worked up a full sweat. I want to tell you, the electricity in this crowd is awesome. I haven't felt like this since it was about 4 o'clock in the morning one morning. We're in a place called Kinshasa, Zaire, when Muhammad Ali came in against George Foreman for the heavyweight championship of the world. I've got goose pimples, and I am watching this event, and a lot of people in here do. The heavyweight champion of the world comes into the ring. This is why we're here. Tyson looks the way he always does when he walks in. He's here strictly for business. He's got that scornful look on his face. Hey, let's get it going. In a while, you see him push the leather back on his gloves. It's like he wants to get his knuckles closer to the leather so he can get them on somebody's face, namely Mike Spinks in a hurry. The right hand lands to the head of Mike Spinks. It's Tyson all the way here in round number one. Vicious shots to the body. Nothing really heavy landing yet, but he's taking them. The uppercut. Body shot. Down goes Mike Spinks for the first time. The count is up to 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. That was a body shot that took him down. Here comes Mike Spinks in. He leaves it right there. There he goes. I don't think you get up from this. Mike Spinks is laying flat on his back. The count is up to 5, 6, 7, and 8. He won't be able to do it. It's all over. Mike Tyson has won it. Spinks almost fell back cold. A dramatic first round knockout for Mike Tyson. Unbelievable strike. It came in the first round. And now the question is, who in this world has any chance against this man?
Being champ of the world is nothing like it. When you're heavyweight champ of the world, you have to understand, being heavyweight champ of the world is great in itself, but being a particular type of heavyweight champ of the world is nothing like it. To be in the same breath of like a Joe Louis or Muhammad Ali and those type of guys, there's nothing like it, where the whole world know who you are. Where you from the United States of America and you get off the plane in another country, it's like you never left home. Everybody in the whole country know who you are. I met the president of Chechnya. I met the president of Istanbul. I was celebrated in Russia. It's unbelievable. I've been to St. Petersburg. I've been to Moscow. They gave me a parade in Moscow. Who would ever think some poor boy from Brooklyn would get a parade in the city of Moscow? They don't even speak English over there. In Japan, they wrote comic books about me. I have comic books about me in Japan. I have little tangerine figures about me in Japan. I've been to Romania. I've been to Istanbul. I've been to Portugal. I've been all over the world. Where do you want to know? I've been to Slovakia, Thailand. I met Gorbachev. I met Silvio Berlusconi. He's the prime minister of Italy. Mr. Mandela always asked me to come over to South Africa and visit the country. I just never had a chance to go over there. Normally I have too many difficulties with my probation officer about traveling.
Being champion, you know, you have women all over the world, all types of women, models, actresses, all types of women. Everybody wanted to be next to the champ, especially when you're on television all the time, people talking about you. I was pretty much an exciting champion. So people were talking about me. I was knocking everybody out in spectacular fashion. So people never saw that before.
My mission is to go and destroy and not to let anything get involved. You get punched, you get hurt. I refuse to be hurt, knocked down, and knocked out. I can't lose. I refuse to lose.
That's huge right hand. That should be it.
I always try to aim through the back of my opponent's head, fantasize my punch going through them and ending out the back of the head. It sounds like a brutal sport, but it's just a technique. It's just an art. And when people hear you talk in this particular fashion, you think of you as some brutal monster, but it's all about the skill, the speed, the accuracy. And that's basically what I main my style after.
I didn't challenge me with their somewhat primitive skills. They're just as good as dead.
People don't have the slightest idea how hard it is to break somebody's jaw, to break somebody's eye socket. And they think it's just with power, but it's the accuracy of the power. When every punch is thrown with bad intentions, with the speed of a devil.
Actually, he was crying in there, making woman gestures like, oh, oh, oh.
My job was to hurt people. I love fighting, not because I like hurting people, because I like the after effect of fighting, and that meant I got the job right. Once the job is done correctly, that's my satisfaction of it all.
I was beating guys off of just pure brute strength and intimidation. Most guys were just pretty much intimidated. They lost the fight before they even got hit, most guys. I knew the art of skullduggery. These guys, I knew how to beat these guys psychologically before I even got in the ring with them.
As soon as I come into the ring, I'm gloved. No, stop it. That's not true. While I'm in the dressing room, 5 minutes before I come out, my gloves are laced up. I'm breaking my gloves down. I'm pushing the lever in the back of my glove. I'm breaking the middle of the glove for my knuckle to pierce through the leather. I feel my knuckle piercing against the tight leather gloves on the Everlast boxing glove. When I come out, I have supreme confidence, but I'm scared to death. I'm totally afraid. I'm afraid of everything. I'm afraid of losing. I'm afraid of being humiliated, but I'm totally confident. The closer I get to the ring, the more confidence I get. The closer, more confidence I get. All during my training, I've been afraid of this man. I thought this man might be capable of beating me. I've dreamed of him beating me. But I always stayed afraid of him. But the closer I get to the ring, I'm more confident. Once I'm in the ring, I'm a god. No one could beat me. I walk around the ring, but I never take my eyes off my opponent. I keep my eyes on him, even if he's ready and pumping. He can't wait to get his hands on me as well. I keep my eyes on him. Then once I see a chink in his armor, boom, and one of his eyes may move, and then I know I have him. And then when he comes to the center of the ring, he still looks at me with his piercing look, and as if he's not afraid, but he already made that mistake when he looked down for that 1/10 of a second. I know I had him. He'll fight hard for the first 2 or 3 rounds, but I know I already broke his spirit. During the fight, I'm supremely confident. I'm moving my head. He's throwing punches. I'm making a miss, and I'm countering. I'm hitting him to the body. I'm punching him real hard. And I'm punching him. When I'm punching him, I know he's not able to take my punches. 1, 2, 3 punches. I'm throwing him punches and bunches. He goes down. He's out. I'm victorious. Mike Tyson, greatest fighter that ever lived.
You know, I sure had a fine time last night,
Jackson. I saw this young lady, Robin Givens, on television one day. I had called somebody, and I said, get me in touch with that young lady, and I left to go to England. I kept calling this guy every day to get me in touch with this young lady, and eventually he arranged for me to get in touch, and I had dinner with this young lady, and me and this young lady went out for a few weeks, and then eventually I proposed to her, maybe it must have been a month, a or two. And then I proposed to her, and then we got married eventually. And that was disastrous because I was too immature to be married, and there's no reason. I was too young to be married. She was too young to be married at the time, so I don't know why I'd done it, but I just was emotional. I was in love, I believe, and I got married. And then, of course, I was being a pig, and I started having my extracurricular activities on the side, and me not being the most cautious and most using the most skullduggery of tricks. I got caught most of the time, and she didn't like that very much. So we got into a great deal of fights, and then it was just pretty ugly. It was pretty ugly.
Michael is a manic depressive. He is. I mean, that's just a fact. It's been torture. It's been pure hell. It's been worse than anything I could possibly imagine. I think for the first time I can understand abused women. There's a time when he cannot control his temper, and that's frightening to me or to my mother.
Well, I can't believe Robin Givens was saying those lies about me right on worldwide television, right there in front of everybody. I don't know what she wanted to accomplish by that.
He shakes.
And I was like flabbergasted. I was pretty much stung.
He swings.
But when I look back at it now, I can't believe I sat there and didn't say anything. But then again, if I would act crazy and start smashing her and going crazy in front of television, that's what they would have wanted. They would have expected that. And so I stayed cool. But I know they expected me to go crazy on television and start ranting and raving. That was the whole plan, I think.
There are times when Michael is manic and he's incredibly abusive. Not physically, verbally.
After his marriage to Robin Givens and his association with Don King, Tyson's life seemed to unravel in full public view. Lawsuits, car accidents, and domestic brawls.
The Burnsville Police Department received a call indicating a disturbance was in progress at the Tyson residence.
Love can be fleeting. The soap opera marriage of boxing champ Mike Tyson and actress Robin Givens is coming to an end. She announced today through her lawyer that she's seeking a divorce after 8 months together.
It was so ironic because we would watch our divorce squabbles on television. We would be in bed together as we were watching our television show. Anyway, I don't think we really wanted to be divorced, but it was just so much. The atmosphere was just so intense that it just wasn't right. So we just separated. I felt a sense of abandonment, but I brought it on to myself. I felt alone. I felt a little ashamed. I felt like a half of a person. I didn't feel totally whole at the time. It just wasn't right. We were just two kids married, and the whole world was in our business. I didn't know really actually how to feel. I was 21, she was 22, and they just wanted to just emotionally unstable, pass judgment on both of us. I'm a bad guy, she's a bad girl. I'm a abusive husband, she's a gold digger. We're just kids. I was always interested in keeping in touch with her for some reason. I didn't want to lose basic touch with her.
What I wanted in a woman is protection, loyalty, companionship, loyalty, friendship, companionship, ferociousness. I want her to protect me and have my back to the bitter end. If I have a fight, I want her to jump in, even if I'm winning, even if she's 90 pounds. I like strong women, not necessarily a masculine woman, but I like strong women. I like a strong, like say a woman that runs a CEO corporation. I like a strong woman with confidence, massive confidence, and then I want to dominate her sexually. I like to watch her. Like a tiger watches their prey after they wound them. I want her to remember me. I want her in a bizarre way. I want her to love me and watch them and just watch them. I want her to keep her distance for at least 20 to 30 minutes before I devour them and take them to the point of ecstasy. I love saying no all the time when I'm making love. I love saying no. When they ask something, I say no. What I want is extreme, always no. Normally what they want is not as extreme as what I want, always no. So I may give them a little, but they have to give me a lot. Whatever they want, turn me around, no. I don't like being loved, I like loving. I don't feel like being loved, I don't like love. I like, I have too much love to give and none to accept. And I turn around when I want to turn around, no. That's what I want to ravish them completely.
After my divorce from Robin, basically I lost a lot of desire in my fighting and stuff. I didn't handle it well. I had a few fights with lesser opponents and I was successful. And then it led basically to the Buster Douglas fight, which shouldn't have been a hard fight. I had beaten three guys prior to Buster Douglas that were better fighters than Buster Douglas without training hard. No, matter of fact, it was four fighters. One of them had, I believe, knocked Buster Douglas out, which was Tony Tucker, without training hard at all, basically for the fights. And so I didn't take Buster seriously. So I went to Japan, and I was hanging out with a lot of women, had women in my room, not taking the fight seriously, not training hard. Matter of fact, I was training, and my sparring partners dropped me. That's how seriously I was training.
Here we go with round number 9. Now let's see if Mike can sustain it. And he's got the adrenaline flow going. He wants to end this thing now. The ninth round of a fight we never expected to be this far. So no matter what happens, we give a lot of credit to Buster Douglas for making this a big, big fight. Tyson trying to end it with one big shot again. He's down. He comes to the uppercut. Come on, Robert. Buster's going to back. Look at this. Buster is not ready to pack it in. Look at this. Look at Buster coming back. Did he buckle the legs of Mike? I don't know. We've got him again. Buster fights back strongly, landing some big shots. And now he can't get Kellis. Look at this. Who would ever have expected this? And around and not Buster. We're back it in. He comes back. Showing the heart, the tremendous heart that we've seen sometimes in Lackey and others. Tonight, Buster's got the heart back. Wow! Mike now is the one that's hanging on the rope. See Mike the way he went back in his heels, doesn't have the good balance, his legs together as Buster's landing these. Oh, nice uppercut by Buster Douglas! Look at this! He's knocked Mike Tyson down for the first time in his career! Mike Tyson hits the canvas! He's in big trouble! He may not be able to recover! It's up to 7 and 8! He's not gonna make it! Unbelievable! Unbelievable! Buster Douglas is the new heavyweight champion of the world! This has got to be, if not the, one of the biggest upsets in the history of boxing! Buster Douglas, the new undisputed heavyweight champion of the world!
I just felt miserable that night. That night, I should have trained hard. I couldn't blame anybody but myself. You know, I couldn't blame Buster. Buster trained wonderful and fought wonderful as well. But I just had a rough night that night. I lost that belief in myself. Once Cuss died, once I went through my divorce, I lost that belief in myself. I didn't lost that. I was that way when I was a kid. I used to love to hear that from Cuss, to refuse to lose, and all this, these great quotes and poems. And I just lost that. I just lost that when I lost my mentor, I lost my friends. All that stuff died when they died.
Hey, Mike, over here.
Wait,
come on.
Mike, over here, Mike.
Mike,
over
here. Got the glasses. Hey, Mike, what happened in Tokyo?
Well, it's a bad situation at the time. But I'll be okay. Buster Douglas fought a great fight, and I'll be champion again within 6 months.
Like I said before, you know, I abused myself, abused my body. And, like, when you reach a status at, you know, a young age, I mean, like being 20, 19, it was a little too much. You know, I don't want to, you know, use excuses, you know. And being 20 years old, being channeled, you're really too young.
I just never had the basics of putting all my life's structure. I guess it comes from, it stems off of my childhood. I never had the tools that a basic child had, the mother, the father, and the whole traditional family, and we work out problems. I never lived that particular type of life. I always looked out for me. And if there's a problem, I'm going to handle it my way, else I'm going to run. And I just never was able to cipher a problem out of us, decode a problem. Everything was totally cryptic to me, and when it got too cryptic, I just booted out the situation.
Oh, I'm in a dream day after day. Beautiful women, such an array. What can I say? Yeah, definitely, that sounds better.
I can tell you that there has been a rape incident report made, and it's my understanding that Mr. Mike Tyson has been alleged to have committed the crime.
Anything to say at all, Mike?
I'm innocent. How you doing, Mr. Charles?
When I was falsely accused of raping that wretched swine of a woman, Desiree Washington,
It was the most horrible time of my life. It was the most heinous day of my life because I go into prison, I lost my humanity. I lost my reputation. I lost everything that I worked so hard for. You know what I mean? Say that I was conducting myself as a little brat at that time and being promiscuous with the women. I've done no such thing as took that woman's chastity at all. I have to be honest. I'm a jerk sometimes, and I say things that sometimes crass and coarse, but I would never do nothing to that extent. And whatever I did, I may have took advantage of women before, but I never took advantage of her. I don't know what to say about that situation. It just basically took the whole life out of me in that situation. I never again trusted anyone, not even myself around certain people. It just took a lot of confidence from me as far as me being with a woman and getting married. I never even trust my wife because of my situation with that rape conviction. And it's just, I'm brooded over my head for so many years that I've never been able to let it go. It really bothers me to this day. And I don't know how I'm going to get that over my head. I know people, all my friends say, let that die, but they're not the one that has to deal with it. That's the hard pillow to sleep with. By going to prison, I lost my faith of trust in God. I became a Muslim in prison, but I really lost my faith in myself. I became almost like unhuman. I've seen things that really I couldn't understand one human being doing to another. For example, many times I've seen people come down, especially medication or police guards, they come to get medication, the guard comes with them. The guard may have been one of the guards that locked the guy up and put him, and all of a sudden a pile of shit comes and smash him right in the face. A pile of shit comes out and smash you in your face. A pile of piss comes out and smash you in the face. These guys pick up their own feces and hit somebody with it. People just might start, all of a sudden it might be a race war. Else one day the kids that work in the kitchen workers might make some homemade hooch and get drunk and just start a riot or something. Else one day somebody may come back and throw some gasoline and try to light it in your cell and burn you up. Or you might be a lady guard and somebody grab you and throw you in the bathroom and rape you. You know what I mean? So many things that happen in prison. It's just, you can't believe it's happening. These people don't care. They got 40 years, 100 years. These people don't care what they do. You can't give them any more time than they already have. So these people, you're walking on a thin rope messing with these kind of people. These people are borderline sociopaths. These people need to be in hospitals more than in prison, so to speak. Trust me, I'm not trying to play a tough guy at all. I don't want any trouble. I have 3 years. I don't want no trouble with no one. In Reading Jail by Reading Town, there is a pit of shame. And in it lies a wretched man, eaten by teeth of flame. In a burning, winding sheet he lies, and his grave has got no name. And there, till Christ calls forth the dead, in silence let him lie. No need to waste the foolish tear, or heed the windy sigh. The man had killed the thing he loved, and so he had to die. And each man kills the thing he loves, by each let this be heard. Some do it with a flattering look, some do it with a word. The coward does it with a kiss, the brave man with a sword. Well, I've been to the hole quite a few times, and being in the hole is just, it's insane in itself. I'm in there 24 hours a day, 23 hours a day with the light on. People treat you horrible there. You never get the light turned off, and they take your blanket, and you sleep in the concrete. You're subject to strip search randomly. You never know when they're going to come and search your room and make you strip. Death is to be welcome. At that particular time, listen, man, you feel like you're dead because when you're in prison, that's the closest thing to death. But it comes down, you stay there so long, you become so used to being by yourself that it's, you're used to talking with yourself, you become your own best friend or your own best company. Everybody's gone, no one calls you. Visits become shorter and shorter. And I know that I'm going insane and I'm crazy for being here, but it's the only sanity that I know. It's the insanity, that's the sanity that I know. Multiple voices. I know it sounds so contradicting, but it's the life that I know in that particular time and situation. The sanity is my only sanity. My insanity is my only sanity.
The debt is paid. The prison term over. 3 years ago tomorrow, Mike Tyson entered an Indiana penitentiary, having been convicted of rape and deviant sexual misconduct. On this day of his exit, the people around him were the same as ever, but something inside Tyson may have changed.
By 6'10", surrounded by his entourage, almost as if he seemed to be entering the ring, Tyson was leaving the prison, a free man for the first time in 3 years. Tyson's motorcade went directly to the Muslim mosque in Plainfield, barely 2 miles from the prison. The caravan followed. He prayed for about 30 minutes, along with 200 others, including another former heavyweight champion who once came back after a 3.5-year layoff.
When I first took my shahada and became a Muslim, I thought I was too extreme. I became such an extreme Muslim. I think I was too strict, too sector, too violent. I used Islam because I was bitter at the world, you know, and I took out people. They didn't believe what I believed. I thought they were the enemy. And as time went on, I realized that's not really the right way to go. You know, I didn't know now. That's why I became more humble, more subservient, because that's what Islam's about. Islam is not about war. It's about humanity, the religion of humanity. And I didn't know that at first. I had to go and truly do some research and some study and find out what the true meaning of it really was, because I wasn't representing it well. When I was in prison, I was so angry at society. I put a tattoo of Mao on me, I put a tattoo of Shea on me, because I just had no faith in our government. And I did that just to despite them. Well, I guess I'm ahead of my time, because nobody was talking about Shea. Now I have a tattoo on him. Now everybody's talking about him. And when you think about it now, they hated Shea, but now Shea is a big item here. He's sold on so many corners, the street corners, sold in so many stores. He's big business now. When I went to China, Mao was big business. They have Mao in shirts now. They would never have that done when Mao was existing. When Mao was existing, he would never allow his shirts probably to be sold for money. A friend of mine, Victor Paradox in Las Vegas, I had told him 2 months earlier that I was looking for a tattoo on my face. At first I was going to put a bunch of hearts on my face. But he said, I'm going to find a tattoo for you. It represents a New Zealand warrior tribe called the Maoris. The Maoris, and they were a very warrior tribe, warrior-like tribe, and they had face tattoos in which they, when they go into war combat, they scared the enemies because of the tattoos. I was just a rambunctious guy, was pretty rebellious, and I really didn't care about what anyone thought. I just thought it was a great tattoo.
When I came out of prison, I felt so surreal. I just, so many friends I had also, so many different people came around me. Had so many people that wanted to be in my face, because when I came out of prison, I had like $200 million, and I had so many friends. It was the same thing. It's as if it never ended. When I first went in, everybody's around Mike. Mike's the man. But I had a different frame of mind. I was afraid of everybody. I wasn't accustomed. I thought people would set me up. I just had a different mind frame. I was scared of everybody and everyone. Well, I didn't necessarily feel like an animal. I just felt like a afraid human being, that everybody was against me. That's really what I felt like when I came out of prison. I felt like everyone was against me.
Put your mother in the straitjacket, you punk-ass white boy. Come here and tell me that if I fuck you in your ass, you punk white boy, you faggot. You can't touch me. You're not man enough. I'll eat your asshole alive, you bitch. Fuck you, you hoe. Come and say in my face, fuck you, you ass for that. Everybody. You bitch. Come on, you bitch. You scared coward. You got man enough to fuck with me. You can't last 2 minutes in my world, bitch. Look at you scared now, you hoe. Scared like a little white pussy. Scared of the real man. I'll fuck you till you love me, faggot.
When I was paranoid, I thought everybody was going to hurt me. Actually, when I was with my girlfriend, we were in bed, and the fact that she was in bed with me, I woke up and looked at her and grabbed her. For some reason, I thought she was a man in bed with me, trying to hurt me. Somebody came in the bed and tried to stab me, and I was just so scared.
Afternoon. In the last 3 years, I had the chance to reflect on my life and develop my mind, and I will continue my journey to making myself a better person so that I can help others. But I'm here today to make a statement about my future. There's been a lot of speculation about my plan, and here they are. I will fight again.
Well, when I was in prison, I was just so depressed because I was hearing the news who was winning the heavyweight championship. It was going around, it was being passed around like a volleyball, and I was so desperately discouraged about not ever being out to fight again. And I was looking forward to come home so I could fight and win a championship again. So when I came out, I fought Frank Bruno for the second time. He was the WBC heavyweight champion of the world. And I trained real hard, and I looked forward to fight. I knew I wasn't the same guy I once was before I went to prison, but I knew I could fight. I could still punch hard, and I knew if I hit him, I'd knock him out.
When I won the championship, I was so happy. It just put, you know, put tears in my eyes. It was just something I thought about once I was in prison. I wanted to have those belts back again.
The new WBC heavyweight champion of the world!
I had unified the championship again when I beat Bruce Sheldon. I fought him and beat him in a one-round knockout. And I had two belts on my waist. After being out of prison, out of 11 months, coming out of prison with two belts on my waist, I really thought I was somebody special then, because no one's ever done that, not even Muhammad Ali. And then once again, I let everything go away, and I believed I was God. I believed I was great. I didn't believe I had to train for nobody. I thought everybody was afraid of me. I thought I was a great fighter, and I just thought I was somebody really special. I fooled around all the time. I had parties at my house. I had tremendous amount of sexual activity, and it caught up with me.
All right, fans, here we go with the main event of the evening. Ladies and gentlemen in attendance, boxing fans joining us around the world, it's time for the bout you've all been waiting for. Finally, it is showtime!
The year is 1996. I'm fighting in Evander Holyfield. I came to the ring supremely confident, knowing that I would beat him. He's a great fighter, Evander Holyfield, but not in my league, I believe. So I come in the ring. I'm rushing out the ring to get a hold of him. The first round starts. We're fighting ferociously. Boom, boom, we're fighting.
Holyfield comes back with a left hook. Holyfield with a combination to Tyson's head.
And all of a sudden, I black out for a reason. I don't know why. I didn't believe he hit me.
Time!
Now what? Mitch Halpern again calls time.
Accidental headbutt.
Who's cut? Tyson is cut. Tyson is cut.
The next thing you know, we continue to fight. The next thing you know, I'm blacked out again. I don't even remember the fight.
As they come together. Again, the headbutt.
That one buckled. That one buckled. Tyson. I mean, Tyson actually got a headbutt and hurt.
And I'm fighting, but all of a sudden I'm getting hit. Boom, 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 boom. I'm rocking all over the ring. He's hitting me all. The punches are not hurting me, but he's just keeping me off balance. Boom, 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 boom. I couldn't feel the punches, but I could just hear them. Pow, 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 pow. And the next thing I know, I'm thinking, what the fuck? What the fuck? Wake up. I'm trying to grab him. Pow, 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 pow. And the next thing I know, the fight is stopped. He must have fought a ferocious fight. It must have been brilliant on his behalf. I was an ex-champion.
It's the most unbelievable thing I've ever been privileged to witness.
When I was heavyweight champion of the world, I believed I ruled the world. I had homes all over the country. I had luxurious apartments all over the country. I had the most exquisite cars. But I loved leeches. Leeches, I wanted them to suck my blood. I just wanted them to suck my blood. All of my blood, I wanted them to suck it. And then they'd sell my blood. Then I'd buy my blood back for allow them to suck it again. And that was my downfall. I just associated myself with so many leeches. And I guess everybody has their purpose in life. And I call them leeches, and that's not from a negative perspective either. I say that because I allowed that to happen. You know what I mean? In some aspects, I'm a leech as well. You know, because I allowed them. I sucked from them as they sucked from them. I guess it was a give and take situation. So there's no one to blame truly but myself.
My philosophy was like people basically suck. Because really, you know what I mean? They're always trying to screw you.
Everyone?
No, you know, you run into, you have these different occasions where you run into nice people, you know what I mean? But, you know what I mean, you've been through experience, you know. They really, you don't have no emotion towards human feelings, you know what I mean?
Hard to trust.
Absolutely.
My first manager, Bill Caton, and those guys, they were like slave masters, basically. Because I was just a young kid, 18 years old, 17 years old. I was too young to even sign a contract with those guys. But I signed a contract. Cuz they died, I signed a contract with these guys. And they took, a third of what I had? Eventually, I got rid of them. And then I got caught up with this other piece of shit, Don King, who's a wretched, this is just a wretched, slimy, reptilian motherfucker. Right, this is supposed to be my brother, my black brother. Right, he's just a bad man. He's a real bad man. He abused you, and he would kill his mother for a dollar. He's ruthless. He's deplorable. He doesn't know how to love anybody. That's just the way he is.
The greatest country in the world, man. This is America, baby.
A friend informed me that most of my money was missing, so we looked at my assets.
Not sure. The money that I that was supposed to be there wasn't there, and we had to do something about it. When I find out, I handle it immaturely. I handle it very immaturely because I'm not accustomed to any business fashion in that mess, so I handled it very immaturely. I confronted him, and he basically denied it, and then I attacked him in front of the Beverly Hills Hotel. I was staying at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and I attacked him. I attacked him in front of these old, old decrepit white women. Must have been a bunch of them. I used to attack them in front of them. They must have thought I was some black heathen or something. I used to attack them and just stomp them. And I really didn't mean because I really loved this man, but I just stomped him and stomped him and stomped him. And I don't know. I guess I blacked out at that moment. And then we went through some, you know, of course we got to go through this court bullshit. And then I received $20 million? I received some small amount of money from them. Probably, I don't know if it was $20 million, $30 million. I don't know what it was. It's a small amount of money. It doesn't really even matter. It just destroyed everything. It was really just a bad time in life.
Well, postponements have jeopardized Holyfield Tyson fights over the years to the point where many of us wondered if we'd ever really be here tonight. It all goes back to their ill-fated 1991 fight. So when Tyson announced he'd suffered a cut over his left eye in sparring to postpone the original May 3rd rematch date, many said, uh-oh, we may never see these guys fight again. But despite the history of postponements, there has always been a feeling of inevitability, an aura of fate that finally brought them together.
1997. Rematch, Evander Holyfield. First round begins. Box cautious.
A straight right by Mike Tyson, shrugged off by Evander Holyfield.
I started feeling groggy again in the clinch. I notice now it's from a headbutt. It's the same feeling I felt when I fought him the first time. I fight the second round. I feel groggy again for no apparent reason. He didn't hit me. He bucks me again. He's taller than me. What is his head doing underneath my head? I received a cut eye.
He looks over to Bill Clean. It's a cut around the right eye of Mike Tyson from a clash of heads, I believe.
That's just what happened. And Mike said, what about this buddy? What about this head?
That's a butt.
Deja vu.
He started looking at the eye. He butts me again. I complain to the referee. The referee doesn't do anything.
Just like in the first fight, Tyson looks over for help from the referee.
I become ferocious. Third round comes out. I fight ferociously. I'm mad.
The old Tyson, we know.
A ferocious Mike Tyson. Listen. The crowd is turning. Many yelling Tyson.
I get so mad, I want to kill him. I fight again. At the moment, I'm enraged. I lose all composure and discipline. I fight and fight and fight, and I want to choke him. I bit him. He got mad. He turned around. I wanted to just kick him right in his groin, but I just pulled back. But I just pushed him. And then I got so mad, I wanted to just choke him. I wanted to kill this guy. I couldn't believe he butted me. And I just lost my cool. I lost my composure. The worst thing a warrior, a soldier could ever do is lose his discipline. I was depressed with myself, not because I bit him, but just because I lost my discipline and composure.
Biting Holyfield in the right ear. What a reaction.
I want to destroy everything around. I want to destroy his corner. I want to destroy everybody in his corner. If the whole ring goes into a rampage, and I'm insane at the moment. I'm a good person, but at that moment, I went insane. I was enraged, and I did not care about fighting no more by the Marcus of Queensberry rule. He butted me with his head intentionally to hurt me, my eye. So I wanted to intentionally hurt him. And so when I bit him again, the male's lanes came in to disqualify me. I didn't really care. I wanted to inflict as much pain as possible on that man, because I was totally insane at that moment.
I'll tell you what, this is unbelievable.
just about had enough. Tyson showing desperation and fighting Holyfield two times. Fiasco in the ring. People are jumping above, trying to get in there. There's the security trying to hold Tyson back.
I don't know what I'm thinking at that moment. At that moment, I'm very angry. I went to my house. I got high after the fight. Went and got high at my house, and I just went to sleep. I smoked some weed, drank some liquor, and I went to sleep.
We must take the most stringent action available to us, which it appears is a maximum fine of $3 million and revocation of license.
I was bitter towards boxing, so I really didn't care anymore. It really hurt nobody but myself, but I was really bitter towards fighting. I had resentments towards the athletic commission, and I just didn't want to deal with it. I also decided to be champion. I wasn't interested in being champion anymore. I was thinking about getting some money.
Heavyweight champion Lennox Lewis and Mike Tyson have circled each other for years.
Fighting Lennox Lewis on June 8th, I got so much self-aggrandizement involved that I just didn't take it too serious.
I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lennox is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless.
And I had to put on the act because no one could sell a fight better than Mike could. Because everybody, that every word that I say, and they want to see whatever I say come to reality.
I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
When I finish this game, they'll never stop talking about me. If only reason they stop talking about me is because I'm not a corporate man, so to speak. I didn't fit in with society standards.
Poetically enough, the two fights are joined together, not at the hip, but at the teeth of Mike Tyson, who ended the first one by biting Evander Holyfield in the ring and almost ended this one by biting Lennox Lewis at a news conference.
I was just walking up towards him, and I walked up kind of brazen and kind of hard, and I guess that intimidated him, so he threw a punch, and the whole fiasco started.
I just have to reign. I have to reign tyrannical. I have to be the beast. I have to be the savage. You know what I mean? Just to put in place the erudites and the bourgeoisies and the people of this society that believe that I'm trash and I'm scum. I'll be trash and I'll be scum, but I'll be angelic trash and scum.
You said you wanted more fights before this one. But now you're not having any. Are you psychologically and physically ready? Could you talk about that?
Yeah. I'm great.
Lewis, another strong overhead right. But it's Lewis trying to finish off Mike Tyson with 1 minute left in the eighth round.
Mike Tyson highly motivated to come into this fight, hoping that this fight would redeem not only his career, but his whole life.
Oh, he's doing a good job. He's got heart. Yeah, you can't take that from
him. Big right hand from Lewis, and Tyson goes down for the third time in his career.
Well, really, the Lewis fight meant more money to me than the title, because I knew I wasn't in no condition to beat anybody. I wasn't in any kind of great shape. I didn't have great physical or psychological shape of mind to beat anyone. But I knew I would get a good, large sum of money.
There's a great moment in the ring after the fight when, during the post-fight interview, you very tenderly reached out and wiped blood from Lennox's cheek while he was answering a question. Deep in your heart, do you feel as though he's your friend?
No, I've been friends with him for 15 years. You know what I mean? We're just like, you know, I fly pigeons, right? And this is a good equation. These pigeons live with each other for 10 to 15 years, right? But when I throw feed down, they kill each other to get it. And it's the same way with fighters. We love and respect each other, but we're like mercenaries. We need that money.
I think controlling money is the art. It's the art to control money, because I'm an extremist. Either I have a lot of money or I have none. I can't live in the middle. If I'm in the center, I'm just a person who can't live, and I don't know why I'm that way. I just don't know why. No one could understand the mind of an extremist. People always, they can judge me, but they can't understand my mind. Nobody, if they don't have that extreme addict personality, you can never understand how a guy can blow $300 or $400 million. It's if I have to live at the top of the world, I also have to live at the bottom of the ocean. I don't know how to live in the middle of the life. Money is somewhat of like paper blood, so to speak.
you know, you needed to live. But I just like to help people. I like to spend it. It makes people happy. And sometimes I neglect myself with it. But then also I make myself happy with it as well. Because I never thought I would live long enough to really enjoy anything. So I was living pretty reckless because I didn't think I would live long enough. Unfortunately, I'm 40 years old. I never thought I would reach this age. That's why I lived recklessly at the day, because I never had no idea I would live to be 40 years old. It's a miracle. And I went through a great deal of money, and I don't have as much as I used to have. And it doesn't bother me as much, because I never was a guy that was crazy about money, but I wish I was smarter. I just wish I was smarter. But, you know, old too soon, smart too late.
And along the way, I became a very proud father of 6 kids, and that was the best moment of my life. I have Gina getting ready to go to American College. That's my oldest daughter, and I'm extremely proud of her. And I have my 2 other kids, Amir and Raina. They were undefeated in the season in basketball at 10 and 11 years old, and it wasn't good more than America, and I just couldn't believe that. And then I have Exodus and Miguel, who also, they're very young, 5 and 2 years old. They're very young, and they haven't accomplished anything yet. Then I have Mikkel, who's 16, who's going to school as well. And I'm just proud to be a happy father.
Get him, Raina, get him. Oh, you got him, Raina. You got him. Oh, you knocked him out, Raina. You did it. And the champion of the world, Raina Iman Tyson. Put your hands up, Raina. All right. You won, Raina.
I met Monica perhaps 21 years ago. A mutual friend of ours introduced us to one another. We hooked up. I went to prison that year. She stuck by my side for the whole 3-year duration. We spent a great deal of time together. We eventually got married. She had a young daughter for me named Raina. And then later on, she had another young son named Amir. And we were married for, I believe, 7 years. But I was gallivanting around with other strange women, hanging on the streets, never coming home, never being a family man. And eventually, we became estranged with one another. And that led to a divorce. But despite all that, we remained good friends. We're a great friend, but horrible married couple. She's the greatest mother I've ever seen in my life. She totally dedicates her life to her children. She's the only mother that let the children tell them what their children say. I want to go to Canada, mommy. I want to go to France. I want to go to Tibet, mommy. And she gets up and go where the kids wants to go. I never seen anything like that in my life. Serious jet setters. And I can't understand that. I was never a jet setter when I was 11 or 12 years old. I never left the street corner.
So, has Iron Mike turned into Mellow Mike? Whether he has or not, Tyson needs to punch with the type of intentions that once made him the baddest man on the planet. An aging fighter's power, the old-timers will tell you, is the last thing to go.
Well, the reason I fought Kevin McBride was just for a payday. I didn't really think I was winning or anything. I didn't anticipate winning. It was just a whole mindset I had. I didn't really care. I was so out of shape. I was tired. I wasn't taking it serious. I was just fighting for the payday.
Kevin McBride, a journeyman, is making Mike Tyson look like a third-tier heavyweight. Left in the 6th round.
And if McBride actually wins the shot, it would be a 10-7 round.
Not a knockdown. McBride just pushing Tyson down. And he's having difficulty getting up.
He wants Joe Cortez to help him.
He can barely make it to his feet at the bell.
A push.
Obviously a push. Tyson totally disorganized.
Hey, come here.
Seventh round, it's all over. Kevin McBride has defeated Mike Tyson. Mike, first let's start with you. Did you want to continue?
Well, I would like to have continued, but I saw that I was getting beat on. I realized I don't think I have it anymore because I got the ability to stay in shape, but I don't got the fighting guts, I don't think, anymore.
When did you recognize that? At what part of the fight?
I don't know. Early into the fight. I'm just sorry I let everybody down. I just don't have this in my heart anymore.
Did you feel as though you had it coming into the fight?
No, I'm just fighting to take care of my bills, basically. I don't have the stomach for this kind of no more. I'm more conscious of my children and those guys looking at my appearance. I don't have that ferocity. I'm not an animal anymore.
Does that mean we won't see you fight again?
Yeah, that's most likely. I'm not going to fight again. I'm not going to disrespect the sport anymore by losing to this caliber of fighters.
Mike, a lot of people wonder what you'll do now with your life. Boxing has been your whole life.
Well, I'm sure I'll find something to do. Boxing doesn't define me. I'm just sorry to disappoint the people in the city. I know I didn't have it in my stomach no more, but I was in dire need to take care of my life. I'm just being honest. I'm not taking nothing away from Kevin. I don't love this no more. I'm just in here. I don't love this no more. I haven't been loved fighting since 1990. But, Kevin, congratulations on your career and good luck. Now, what's your best to make a lot of money?
Just tired of fighting. Boxing has no place in my heart anymore.
If I have any anger, if it's directed at anyone, it's directed at myself. Because I'm disappointed with myself. Because of things I should have known better, things I should have accomplished in my life, and things that I've done that I know was wrong towards the people I love most. In the past, when alcohol and drugs had got a hold of me, I was totally disrespectful. I was totally out of control. I had no respect for anybody. I had no respect for myself. I didn't care about people who loved me. I almost didn't care about my children. That's the only thing that kept me straight and made me just decide to, yes, Mike, you have to check in. And I became an addict out of depression, and I had to eventually go to this program because it left a great sting in my heart and a big emptiness. I had all these things in life, but none of them fulfilled that big hole that I had in my life. You know, nothing fulfilled that. So I noticed if I could have all that and it hasn't fulfilled that hole that I have, it's not going to do it. So it has to be something else that I'm looking for. I don't know what I'm going to do, but, you know, it's something I'm dealing with. That's why coming to this program, I think, was the best thing that ever happened to me. I just want to see my kids get married and graduate from school. I want to see a grandchild. I want to see Mike Tyson with a grandchild. I wonder what that's going to be like. I want to stay out here. I want to see my kids grow. I want to be a better person in life. I don't like the person who I become. I'm an insane individual. I put all those drugs in my system. I do not want to do that any longer. And I just want to be a decent human being, which I know I can be. I just feel good about myself now. I just have a better outlook on life, and I just want to make everything better. And I can't make up for the past, of course, but I just want to have a healthy future. I'm just interested in my health more than anything now. What I've done in the past is a history, and what I'm going to do in the future is a mystery.
In the rain, from Brownsville to Spot Fit to Boxing King, man, a machine, an animal, physical strength and intelligence, but that type of intellect y'all respect to connect those punches. Still as a kid, he stole lunches to make millions in the hundreds, chaotic conscious, the rage, the stage, the grandeur, had to endure slander, took it like a man cause the mighty stand alone, in the binger at home, the penitentiary, barbed wire and stone, was amped up, they like the champ up, even my brains in handcuffs, the Robin Hood, seasonal Santa, and y'all ain't give him nothing to begin with, dilapidated buildings, the drug epidemics,
Historical stories, pain, love, and glory of Mike Tyson. Never see another like him.
Speed,
strength,
skill,
power,
accuracy,
legacy,
victorious,
legendary,
speed,
strength,
skill,
power,
accuracy,
legacy,
champion,
legendary, true legend, his hands with two weapons. Understand his mind's a true blessing. Designer jewels and diamonds to modern day Dak Johnson, flying private jets and Philippe Tekken, Audemars, where ladies cadaver complexions, a lot of sexings, hung with a lot of stars, learned a lot of lessons between dead homies and best friends, and getting domed out in the stretch bins. Educated from the hood and the pestilence, that dead presidents don't see your pockets and just get in. You got a full court press for them. Benjamins, I seen money be the death of men. It's a warrior's world, only strong survive. Who's next to try? Who's next to be the next T.Y.? S.O.N. He gave us hope, made the best man win.
I am Mike, is in the house.
Strength,
I am Mike, is in the house.
Power,
I am Mike, is in the house.
Legacy,
I am Mike, is in the house.
Legendary,
I am Mike, is in the house.
Strength,
I am Mike, is in the house.
Power,
I am Mike, is in the house.
Legacy,
I am Mike, is in the house.
Legendary,
Legendary.